Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now. But if you could see me, you'd be saying, whoa, who is that? It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic full zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL. As you know far too well from listening to Useful Idiots, the 2024 election is coming fast. And while we can't predict for sure which candidate will win, we do know that either way, everyone else in the world will lose. Unless there was a fun and easy way to make a little extra cash on the whole terrible contest. That's right, betting's not just for sports fans anymore. Now it's the political junkies' time to shine. We figured that if we spend all our time on Twitter anyway, following the election and endless political analysis, why not put our knowledge to the test? It's MyBookie, a new sports book that lets you bet on the 2024 election from the general election down to who will win each state. If the world is crashing anyway, why not cash in? Don't miss out on this. Pick a side. Use promo code USEFUL to double your first deposit and instantly start with a leg up, only with MyBookie. Welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Helper.
And I'm Matt Taibbi.
This week, we're mixing it up a little bit because we have so much great material. So the four basic food groups is in our Substack only segment, but we got some great stuff for you that we think you will really enjoy.
The world hates each other right now, right? That's basically the headline because of the Georgia thing, right?
Yeah, I guess I don't think it's I think it's pretty consistent with like recent history trends.
That's true. That's true.
Matt all of a sudden is like, you know, there's a lot of hate in this world. You think you hadn't written a book called Hate Inc.
Right, exactly.
Or you also wrote another book, which you never talk about.
Which one?
The drug dealer book.
Business Secrets of Drug Dealing. We'll get to it. Yeah.
We'll get to it. All right. You got to leave people wanting more.
That's like the of all the books I've written, it's the one that I'm probably most proud of, but I never talk about it.
Yeah. You know what? We should offer Substack only people a Matt Taibbi book club.
What would happen in the Matt Taibbi book club?
They could ask you questions. We could just read your books.
God, I don't even want to join that club.
I mean, yeah, I'll run it. Okay. Katie Helper's Matt Taibbi book club. And then they can ask me questions and I'll just guess. Katie, right. What was Matt thinking? Well, you know, Matt was thinking, I think we were both thinking, you know, when I was interviewing Goldman Sachs people.
Right. What was the inspiration for this phrase? Right?
Yeah. No, yeah. But I think we should read your books. So also people keep asking people did a video about our going rogue and they really were like, I can't believe they did that because of the serious stuff.
Really?
Yeah. So
someone actually did a video of that?
Yeah.
Can I Vanguard. See it?
And, you know, today we're going to reveal what really happened and really why we're not at Rolling Stone anymore.
Oh, it had to be because of the Midas thing, Midas Foundation thing, right? Because they were secretly Saudi funded and we objected to that.
That's thank you, Matt, for bringing that up.
Right. Do you want to explain? When we found out about all that Saudi money and the connections between Roger Penske and Trump, we just bailed.
We bailed. We were like, we stand.
Morally, we can't have any of this.
We can't. And we like Yemen. And right.
We like the war in Yemen or Yemen?
No, we don't like the war in Yemen.
We like Yemen.
We like Yemenis.
And people in Yemen.
People. Although we do feel conflicted because of the... when Yemeni kids get too tall.
Right. We remember? Like them short. Yeah. Why was it? What was our reason?
Because if they are too tall, they can bite bad areas.
Oh, right. So you got to keep them like below fire
yeah,
level.
A certain height, yeah.
Right. So yeah, so we're conflicted there.
That's a silver lining. We'll say it's silver lining, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that was what was keeping us at Rolling Stone that whole time.
That we were towing the party line.
Right,
because starving children in Yemen line. And you know what? We couldn't do it anymore because honestly, I like chubby kids. I don't like emaciated kids.
Right. You like short.
Short and chubby. Oh, yeah. Right. But okay, I'm half behind this devastation there because short is good, but I like chubby. Right. So that's what pushed me. Oh, okay. We're taking off the mask. Look, we were fine pushing the pro Saudi war against Yemen, famine, cholera thing, that whole thing.
Right. People didn't notice that we actually injected pro Saudi messages.
Yeah.
Throughout all subliminal. 80 episodes that we did with Rolling Stone.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think one day you wake up and you realize, what am I doing? I'm
that 81st time.
That 81st time. We were like, I can't push the Saudi war against the people of Yemen anymore, even though I like short kids, but I like them chubby. And you just cannot have starvation.
You can't compromise.
And you can't, at the end of the day.
Right. Because once you give that little tiny bit, next thing you know, it's a generation of short, skinny kids.
Right. Not short chubs.
Right.
Short chubs is okay. Very cute. Easy to take around with you.
And safe.
And safe, you mean like for padding? Like,
well, no, because they won't bite.
Oh, right. But if you have to pick them up, that's the problem.
Right, that is the problem.
But they also are safe because you throw them in the water, they'll bounce. Not bounce, float. They'll float. And if you throw them on the ground, they'll bounce too. You know, so this is the type of thing that you can't get away with saying at Rolling Stone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's all this stuff that we wanted to get off our chest, but we just couldn't.
And yeah.
Finally, it was that conflict with that, you know, Penske Trump Saudi dominated version of Rolling Stone.
Yeah, that's not the version that we signed up to work with.
We didn't sign up to work with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Not on our watch.
Just for the Penske Trump version, not the pro Saudi version.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was the pro Saudi version, not the Penske Trump version.
Is this any of this true, by the way? Like, is any of the Saudi Rolling Stone stuff true?
I don't know. I mean, the Trump thing is ridiculous.
What's that?
The allegation by this group, I think they're called the Midas Foundation, is that, you know, basically Rolling Stone is a pro-Trump enterprise because of Roger Penske's connection to, you know, to Trump. I guess he received a medal or something from Trump. I mean, has anyone ever read, the people who were saying this, have they read Rolling Stone in the last 5
years?
I mean, I think it's literally 100% negative about Trump. There was, I can't think of a single article that they ever wrote that was anything but completely negative about Trump. And that, you know, going against because we wanted to do all this pro-Trump propaganda.
Right.
They wouldn't even let us.
This is good. We got to generate more controversy. And also, now people are going to have to do another expose now that they know it's actually Yemen related. Saudi Yemen related.
What show is this again?
The Vanguard. Their shtick is like they talk about kind of online controversies, like YouTube online controversies.
This is one of those weirder forms of media censorship. And I'm surprised that this hasn't gotten more coverage from BreadTube, considering the magnitude of the show. Obviously, people are probably aware that Useful Idiots on Rolling Stone has moved, and it's now going to Substack, right? Katie Halper and Matt Taibbi were the hosts of. It was an extremely popular show on Rolling Stone. I mean, average their videos, you can look, they'll get anywhere from like 180,000 views to like 250,000 views. I'm sure it was also available on, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Instead of, renewing their contract, keeping the podcast going, Rolling Stone cut the program. Matt Taibbi had, publicly left Rolling Stone on good terms and continued, a few months back, I believe last year, but continued to do Useful Idiots with Katie Halper. Then it was announced that they would be leaving and going to the Substack model, similarly to how Matt had. It was unclear. They hadn't really publicly addressed why that occurred. Finally, in the first episode of their podcast, as it's uploaded on YouTube, Check it out, everybody. They interviewed Daniel Ellsberg, but they kind of address the transition, and I wanted to just respond to it a little bit and talk about
it. Yeah, we can just play the first couple of minutes of this and then respond, because yeah, they do kind of get to why they were cut from Rolling Stone.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Halper.
And I'm the other, Matt Taibbi. How are you, Katie?
I'm good, you?
I'm doing well. You know, a lot of people have questions about what happened and why we're no longer Rolling Stone.
We consciously uncoupled from Rolling Stone.
Is that really true, though? I mean,
no,
I
think it's not.
We've been telling people that it was an amicable
break. Amicable, yeah.
But the truth is that it was political.
It was political.
Yeah.
Should I just come clean?
I think you should just admit it.
All right. So,
you know, you cost us both our jobs. So.
I did. I cost us both of our jobs. I created this great opportunity, though, for us to come to Substack. So and, you know, a lot of people were calling me an Assadist and calling Matt by extension an Assadist. And I was trying to, I was pretending that, you know, our severing with Rolling Stone or their severing ties with us wasn't related to Syria, but it absolutely was. Okay. Oh my God. It's such a relief to say that. So we had political differences and I wanted to open up a studio in Damascus. I wanted Useful Idiots Damascus. Yeah. I wanted a DT, Damascus Today. They wouldn't even talk about putting into the contract.
And they wouldn't air that glowing profile slash interview that you had done with
Bashar al-Assad. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we basically, all right, I wanted Assad to be the third host.
Right. I thought the chemistry wasn't quite there.
It's off screen. There are a lot of fireworks. But you're right. It just doesn't translate on screen. Like when he and I are hanging out, there's a lot of chemistry and like everyone notices it. But it just doesn't work on screen. Yeah. So, I mean, for Matt, for you, it was a creative difference with Rolling Stone. I think that maybe they wouldn't have gone on board even if the online chemistry had been more apparent.
Yeah.
So they're pretty much joking around at this point. But
yeah. So essentially to kind of for people who didn't follow the show or aren't aware of the situation, essentially the joke is that. And a joke which is rooted in reality, which is the fact that they're basically confirming that Rolling Stone parted ways with Useful Idiots because of their coverage on Syria, having people on the show like Aaron Maté, taking into account Katie Halper's personal show and her coverage and you know, obviously her Twitter personality. I think that that was essentially what they were implying got the show axed. And also the fact that they didn't have Matt's clout as a, you know, probably the biggest name at Rolling Stone holding it down for them. You know, a culmination of those two things, I would suspect, resulted in them being like, this isn't, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze for us, blah, blah, blah. We can't have all this hate that we're getting from our media people. But
I just think it's crazy that you'd, as a company or corporation, be like, let's have Matt Taibbi and Katie Halper do a podcast together. And then a year in, it's like, oh, they said something that was controversial. So now it's like, what did you expect?
They literally
happen?
Named
like,
their podcast Useful Idiots.
Yeah. Like it's the kind of the reason people watch that show in the first place was to hear opinions from outside of the political mainstream. So again, I don't understand the logic behind this at all. Like, were they given a list of talking points that they weren't supposed to say anything about? And then this was one that they decided to talk about regardless. Like, it just seems such like a brazen violation of their right to express themselves freely on the platform, which Rolling Stone provided them. So again, this is why I could never work for a fucking corporation. Stuff like this, you know, I don't want to have to be.
Well, it's kind of the final straw, right? People always want to bash Matt Taibbi for going on these independent outlets. It's like, what the fuck do you want? Do you want people that are going to pacify themselves and play the fucking game and appease the advertisers? Like, you know, I don't think Jan Werner even owns Rolling Stone anymore, right? So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it's just there, you know, there's no anchor in like anybody that would, you know, value like journalistic integrity, right? At this point, it's just a conglomeration that's about milking as much money out of it as possible. So if advertisers start to get pissed at Rolling Stone magazine because they're talking about this stuff or whatever, there's going to be no integrity as far as like, oh, we're going to keep doing this because it's the right thing to do because the reporting is correct. Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just think it's crazy again that such benign comments ended up, you know, resulting in this decision. I guess the Syria thing is super controversial still in mainstream media circles.
Well, it's just because they refuse to acknowledge it, right? And even as soon as you start platforming people who accurately point out the massive failure of the entire media structure of America, which everybody from Fox News to Democracy Matt Taibbi does that. This, like, shit.
Matt Taibbi has pointed that out. That's what I'm saying. It's just stupid about this decision.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it's because he left Rolling Stone as a full-time reporter. He no longer had the clout within the company to like make it worthwhile having him on in that capacity. That's what I imagine. Yeah. But I don't know. Right. I wish that they would have given us, given more information. Essentially, the point of doing this, I just wanted to be like, fuck Rolling Stone, basically.
Yeah, we should have them on. We should have them do a segment about
this. Yeah,
where they're watching us, watching them, watching us.
Right? Watching them, watching us. There is a.
We can get like a singularity kind of a thing going, right? Where we all kind of go back in time and we're each other's parents and everything. I think
Back to the Future.
Right, it'll be Back to the Future, but as we go through the conversation, like our appearances will change and our people will vanish from our photos and stuff.
Right.
Like that.
Let's hear the end of it, the rest of it.
I like the guy's hat.
Yeah, me too.
Got that kind of smoky pot look. I like it.
Yeah, it blends in though with the background, so it just makes it look like. It doesn't. You know what? That's a lie. I don't know how he pulls it off, but it's red on red and it doesn't blend in.
It works. What's the flag?
Oh, fuck around and find out, probably.
Fuck around and find out. I like it.
In their business to Substack, but like, what the fuck is the alternative when even journalists with the clout of Matt Taibbi can't have these conversations on a corporate sanctioned platform? Like, you can't blame people for going to a space where they're not going to have their speech restricted and where their topics of conversations can be freely, curated. It's crazy. Why would you not do that? If you
especially
have
when you can bring your own audience and take it all away. Like, who the fuck is reading anything from Rolling Stone now?
Yeah, I mean, and well, that's what's crazy too about this story is that I was under the impression that Rolling Stone was really trying hard to like go back to their roots of being like the cool, outlet for politics and music and all that. And usefully it's fit right in with that kind of brand or vision, having the more edgy voices on their platform does make people like me and you, it draws them to the platform. So, what are they going to report? I don't want to fucking listen to Useful Idiots if it's hosted by Ezra Klein and Samantha Bee or whatever the fuck. Like, I'm not going to listen to that. I want to listen to their program that's hosted by Matt Taibbi and Katie Halper, and now I'm going to listen to it on Substack and not Rolling Stone. So again, I just don't see how this is a good decision on their part as a company. It makes no sense to me because they already have that kind of like centrist block down. I mean, anyone that goes to Rolling Stone for their news is probably not like a firebrand fucking progressive. So they already have the kind of more mainstream centristy demographic on lock. It seemed like this was kind of their attempt to reach out to people like us.
I'm interested in our story now.
I know, me too. I mean,
right? What happened?
I don't know. We're going to have them on to tell us, the Vanguard. Maybe they did some more research.
I'm just saying that I think that mutually, it might end up being a funny segment if our podcast talks to their podcast, talks back to our podcast continually until we get sort of an endless loop of
until
us talking
Rolling
about
Stone.
Them, talking about us, talking about them, talking about us, talking about them. Like it could be like
the mirrors facing each
right,
other.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It'd be like the scene with Enter the Dragon when Bruce Lee, walks in with all those mirrors and everything.
Yeah.
If we can keep going for week after week after week, speculating about why we got fired.
Yeah.
Them commenting about it, and we then should, us. Right.
And we should crowdsource why we got fired.
We should.
That's actually really good. I'll do that right now. I'll tweet it live if you want.
Why did we get fired?
Yeah. Hashtag why did we get fired? Matt, we didn't do a hard launch. We're going to have to do a hard launch soon, but we also need to drum up some controversy. So I think what should be the big mystery, say it to our faces. Hashtag say it to our faces, Rolling Stone.
That's right. Don't just hand us our walking papers and tell us to go.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to figure this out. We're going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, so people, viewers, fans, listeners, watchers of Useful Idiots, please tell us your theories about why we're no longer at Rolling Stone.
Right, and then we want, the great thing about the Vanguard is that as we watch this, we'll get more interested in the question ourselves.
Right.
Right, and it'll inspire us to dig.
Well, that's what I was going to say, that great journalistic whole thing that you do, Matt. You can now apply it to what happened to Matt Taibbi.
Yeah, because you're always want to make sure, like, you don't care who gets the story. It could be the next person. If you do the job well and the other newspaper moves the story forward, that's good in the end, It's competition, but you're moving the story forward.
And I think, honestly, if you show that you still have that,
Right.
Rolling Stone may want us back. And this time we're going to go in guns blazing and demand that we have a Assad as a co-host and a fat Yemeni child as a co-host.
That's right. It would be four, right? Because part of this was the finances of it. They didn't want to go for that third
host
with a sub. Yeah. But now we're going to say, no, now, you know, on our terms,
it's on our terms,
be just three.
It's going to be four.
It's going to be four. Now, one of them is going to be a fat Yemeni child.
Sorry. We can just say FYC is what we call them.
FYC. And no, yes, it's true. It's going to be a short, you know.
Short. We don't have an option. Yeah, we don't have
any options. We want you to pay him an adult salary.
Yeah, but right? The good thing is an adult salary. Okay, I don't want to cater. I don't – look, off the record, I know we're doing the, like – we're going on the offense. But if I could just make a practical argument, two things. One is I spoke to Bashir, and he's okay financially. He says he'll do the show. An in-kind donation, he said, is what he called it. And then
he may be willing to do that, but that shouldn't be a condition that we accept.
You know what? You're right. Full-time salary for Bashir al-Assad. Right. And I'm just showing Rolling Stone what they could have had.
Mm-hmm.
They could have had that.
Right.
But Bashar, is that what you said?
I think it's Bashar, isn't it?
Yeah, but friends, it's an
Bashir. Oh, right. Yes. Yeah,
it's a nickname. Bashy, I can't say, right. I can't even say the nickname I usually call him because that would get me in trouble. But so here's what you lost, Rolling Stone. You lost a free Assad co-host. And look, the other thing is that the economy in Yemen means that even if you fully blow up a Yemeni child with food and candy, it's very cheap.
It could have been.
It could have been cheap, but now we're going to give you, the American child fat plan.
Right.
Which is much more expensive.
So now we want four full-time hit podcaster salaries.
Yeah. And you want to eat candy.
Right, right. You could have had three hosts for the price of two. Now you're going to have to pay for four, essentially.
Essentially.
Right? So this is learn a business lesson.
Yeah, seriously. Sorry, guys.
Right.
Sorry, not sorry. So yeah, the plot thickened this week because we revealed the whole series, Yemen stuff.
The Yemen Saudi connection, right?
And in all seriousness, that's a bad thing. Saudi Arabia should not be doing that whole thing. And we should have a guest on to talk about it. But by the way, PBS had this guy on, Al Jolani, and they're totally trying to rehabilitate him. He's basically Al Qaeda. I predict that this guy is going to be making a lot of appearances. This is a former leader of Al Qaeda in Syria, and he's now pushing the idea that he's ex-ISIS, now Al Qaeda leader, and he is talking to, he's doing a full media press right now.
The critics love Hemingway, the new film from Ken Burns and Lynn Novick.
You're recognized, you're designated as a terrorist by the United States, by the United Nations, by many governments.
Look at his face. He's like,
there's a lot of Americans who would say you have no business being a leader as a terrorist.
What say ye?
What do you say to them?
First, we are not the rulers here. We are one part of the Syrian revolution. The Syrian revolution is not just one person. It's a people's revolution. Also, this is an unfair categorization. It's a political label that has no truth or credibility. Because throughout our 10-year journey in this revolution, he's really soft-selling it. We haven't posed any threat to the West. No security threat, no economic threat, nothing. That's why this designation is politicized. We call on countries to revise their policies towards this revolution.
You have in the past said that you
look at his eyes. He keeps
determined
so
to fight
shifty.
The United States and its allies.
Looks a little like Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, we have criticized Western policies, but to wage a war against the United States or Europe from Syria, that's not true.
من خلال سوريا فهذا الأمر ليس بصحيح.
Your Arabic's really good.
We didn't say we wanted to fight. We didn't say that. We would also like to ask, what is the definition of terrorism? How do you define it? I know it's pretty good.
What is the definition of terrorism?
Well, Bosch, your teacher's name. Bosch. Today, every country has a terrorism list containing any person or another party a country says is against it. The practical definition of terrorism is killing innocent people, children, poor people, women, and attacking people's property. Today, these acts are committed by the criminal Assad regime. It's more deserving of this designation. Till now, there was recognition Assad, although he carried out numerous chemical attacks, some say over 100 against his people. There's recognition of Assad, yeah. And destroyed schools, killed women and children, dropped barrel bombs on civilians in villages and towns. And destroyed great cities like Homs and Aleppo. These are historic cities, 4,000, 5,000, or 6,000 years old. Come on, how many? Get your facts right. But there's still international recognition of this regime.
بشرعية هذا النظام كوجوده يعني والرسالة
الجوهرية معادلة بسيطة جدا في here comes يعني the talking point, guys.
نريد أن نوصلها أو يفهمها الناس هو أن
the الشعب أراد أن يغير حاكم
وأن يغير نظام حكم
and the ruler wanted to change
الحاكم
people.
نظام الحكم هذا أراد أن يغير الشعب بأكمله فتغيير الحاكم
changing a ruler is a lot easier than changing an entire population.
That's probably true.
You say here now then
yes and no. I mean Saddam, it's easier, but then what happens?
Leader will not support what you call external jihad, that you will not support any attacks against the United States.
I repeat, our involvement with Al-Qaeda has ended.
يعني كان دخولنا مع القاعدة في السابق هذه حقبة وانتهت يعني وحتى
and even when we were with Al-Qaeda, we were against carrying out operations outside of Syria.
كنا نرفض
we were
يقام
local from the table and it's completely against our policy to carry out attacks against foreigners from Syria. That was never intended nor did we ever do it.
نفعله
على الإطلاق يعني.
So I like that he's got the talking points down. That guy, the journalist, is throwing him very clear questions, very good setups.
Mm-hmm.
Will you say that you will not engage in foreign jihad?
Yeah, grooving fastballs right over the plate.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So I'm just saying, keep your eye on that. And if you look at his before and after, my thing is that they have a harder time because unlike Osama bin Laden, who had nice eyes, this guy has serial killer eyes.
You thought bin Laden was handsome, right?
Well, I did. Much like, I mean, he was not a Soleimani, but he is handsome. I think we can just admit that. In fact, I got into trouble.
I'm sorry.
What?
It's just so funny that we're in this place where this is actually happening. I mean, considering where we were 20 years ago, that the mere mention of anybody who was even tangentially somehow connected to Al-Qaeda would have people running in the streets, fleeing and calling for the invasion of countries that weren't even connected to the matter. Now we're actually going to try to rehabilitate this person publicly. And for people who are actually going to take that as some kind of compliment of Assad, seriously, that's not what I'm saying at all. It's just that the American position on this is so ridiculous.
There's some historical precedents. Yeah, you don't have to like Assad to think this is a bad idea.
And you know, and obviously this was one of the defining problems. You know, there was a schism about this within even the Obama administration. Remember that was the whole reason that Michael Flynn got bounced from the Defense Intelligence Agency, because he was talking about how these people aren't really moderate, right? That we're aligning with in this area. And I don't know. It just seems like a preposterous place that we're ending up in.
Yeah, he's like Roger Stone and Pink Floyd. He used to be with Al-Qaeda. Now he's not. He doesn't, you know.
Roger Waters?
Yeah, sorry. Roger Waters.
Yeah. Roger Stone. That band would have been so much worse.
It would have been so much, or better.
or better, that's true. Little Roger Stone on vocals with David Gilmour doing the guitar.
Oh my God, we got to actually set that. We got to do that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. What song would you want to have them play? Like, oh, you don't know any Pink Floyd song.
Comfortably Numb.
Comfortably Numb, that's right. Yeah.
I'm reading Syrian Girl on Twitter. 10 years of beheading, severing hands, torturing journalists, and shooting women on accusations of adultery. But Al-Qaeda leader al-Jalani wore a suit when talking to Frontline, so it's okay for the U.S. to support its takeover of Idlib now. Not his take, not his hot take. Yes, his take, but also his takeover. This tweet is pretty good. Chilling call by al-Nusra tells mother he beheaded her son. He's your son. Where's your son now? I beheaded your son today. So Al-Qaeda terrorist Sick boasts to grieving mother after stealing Syrian soldier's mobile phone moments after his murder. Anyway, yeah. So he's not a good guy. And I just want to do one more thing, which is, do you know that journalist, that guy who was interviewing him? What we have here is
strong beard energy there.
Strong beard energy and strong. We just went shopping before this interview energy and
right.
And coordinated. Or it's the type of thing like, I bet if you showed up in that room, they'd be like, we did not plan this.
Right. That's right.
Right.
Because yeah.
Just so people know, they're both wearing navy blazers and button down, like light blue button down shirts. But what's interesting is the journo. If you zoom in, he's actually rocking a kind of Patagonia thing underneath it.
Underneath it, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which is very weird. It's almost like he's trying to suggest a cravat.
Yeah, an ascot, maybe.
Ascot, yeah.
That would be a good look for a former al-Nusra leader.
Right.
An ascot.
Al-Jilani, yeah. He should have a fuck around and find out ascot.
That would be great. That would be great.
But then, you know.
I would be all for it if you were to wear it, right? That. Right, beheadings, all that stuff in the past, you know.
Oh, it's a callback if you have something around the, wow.
Oh, that's
oh
what it is.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Beheading
right.
Callback, that's awful.
See, all these dimensions that we, like, if we didn't do this hard work of looking at at these videos and pictures, we wouldn't have caught all these.
Right, know? And this is really why Rolling Stone knew we were onto this story.
Right.
Before
right.
We did.
Sniffing this out.
Yeah, they, yeah. And he does look like Willem Dafoe.
Which one, Martin
journalist.
Smith?
Yeah.
I think it's Willem Dafoe times Ken Burns times something else. I can't figure out what the third.
Interesting. Are you saying that because that is some powerful advertising? Because right before this, of course, we were going to cut it out. But if you play
the Hemingway thing.
Yeah, there's a Hemingway doc by right. Ken Burns. So
of course there is.
He
is
does
there,
look
is,
like
is,
that.
Is there anything that, that Ken Burns hasn't done a doc about?
Maybe actually, now that you mention it,
that we should crowdsource. Can you tweet that out right now?
Yeah.
Please name something that Ken Burns has not done a documentary about.
Well, yeah, but I think the answer's right there.
This.
Yes.
Right. And our departure from Rolling Stone.
Right. You're right. That's really what that is.
I can't figure who that third variable is. It's,
yeah. Who do you think?
Wait, so your variable was who again?
Willem Dafoe.
It's Willem Dafoe plus Ken Burns or times Ken Burns minus something else. That's going to bug me. It's going to bug me so much that I can't nail that third male variable. Wilson, you got any ideas?
Is it Jeremy Irons?
Could be. Yes. Yes, that's correct, I think.
Oh, yeah, I kind of see it.
Right? Yeah, we should also do the celebrity math on this.
Yeah,
celebrity math. So, yeah, I think it's Dafoe times Burns minus Jeremy Irons. No, plus Jeremy Irons.
Plus, yeah, I was going to say.
Plus Jeremy Irons.
All right. I'm going to
Stephen King.
Stephen King too. Stephen King times, they're very similar. There's a similar like vibe with both of them. But yeah, you're right. The jaw is very Stephen King. And the eyes are kind of Stephen King eyes.
But I just want to make sure that people see, if for people who are missing it, Matt Taibbi, you saw his old look, right? Which is more flattering, the extremist look or the Western look?
If you mean Jilani?
Yeah, going back to Al-Jilani.
The extremist look is kind of badass.
Yeah.
Right? Would you approach that guy in a bar? I wouldn't.
No. But, you know, I don't think I'd approach either one in a bar. Now, this one I would. Let me just tell you something. Not to be too personal, TMI.
Uh-huh.
But this guy, I mean, I think within a couple of minutes, I'd probably back away. Also, I'm not sure you'd find him in a bar.
Is that him?
Yeah, he was handsome, right?
Kind of, yeah.
I don't know what happened to him.
He looks like he's got things on his mind.
I don't know how old he was then, but he definitely has that, like, I'm going to become the commander in chief of the Syrian militant group Tahrir al-Sham.
And then interviewed on PBS by a guy who's a cross of Jeremy Irons, Ken Burns, Stephen King, and Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. And I think Smith could have probably pushed back on this more. Although I get it, when you go shopping with someone, you kind of, there's a special bond that develops.
Right.
But he did say that he would, quote, fight the United States and its allies. And he also told people not to accept help from the West in their battle against ISIL. I feel like he didn't really address that.
He didn't.
Anyway, so but keep your eye on that guy. And not because he used to be handsome, although it'd be great if he became handsome again. I mean, no, it wouldn't be great. So, you know, this is a new thing we're doing on the show where we kind of live, you know, we crowdsource in real time. So if we could just look at our crowdsourced question. Useful Idiots Pod crowdsourcing. Why did Rolling Stone sever ties with us? Let us know your theories. Also, who does Martin Smith look like? Okay. Let's see. So Brutus Judas writes, to make room for Neera Tanden's new podcast. Julius, you know the thing, Ditterbops writes, just like they stopped featuring real music, they need to stop featuring real journalism. Benji, Beachside Benji, honestly, I'm impressed that they kept y'all as long as they did. Y'all were controversial in a good way. Regular Lawyer, why did Rolling Stone sever ties with two Russian agents? Do you really have to ask? Then Michael Miello goes, you're kidding, right? He was kidding. Anik Fasal, because both of you refused to go to brunch after Kamala was sworn in.
That was also a factor, yeah.
Max Blumenthal, who's a great journalist. PetSmart dropped their sponsorship after learning you were anti-shark. Mm. Maybe necrophilia is a bridge too far. Mm-hmm. Because you found out Kurt Loder is a really an immortal. Like the Highlander, if you continue to pull on the threads of the conspiracy, would have had profound global impact, which is true.
I like this one. This is good. The sarcasm energy on this is great.
Which one?
Because your ad reads with Matt were just too good.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the woke dead were threatening to Me Too Katie.
That's funny.
They finally realized the name of your show was irony. They felt bad about holding you back and wanting you fly free. I like that. Having a drum kit in the picture and never playing it live is an insult for a music magazine that can only last too long. Big Shark and Big Necrophilia really put pressure on. They learned your plans to restore the USSR. You violated the pun limit clause in your contracts. That may be true. They're distancing themselves in the event of imminent necrophilia charges. Too many tanky takes and guests hurt credibility. Rob Green, because Saudi paymasters are different than Russian ones. He's serious. He actually hates us. So what do you think that is? I don't actually know what that means.
That's the reference to this new thing, the conspiracy theory about Rolling Stone being run by
we're paid by the Russians, not
right. Too many bad attempts at humor. We can't skip that. That.
They are anti-necrophilia, obviously. Too many bad attempts at humor. I don't take that serious.
Boring.
So we got some good responses.
Yep, absolutely. Those are funny.
Oh wait, do we get Martin Smith? Hold on. Sorry. Martin Smith. Who do we got? Gary Cole, Walter White, Martin
Gary
Sheen.
Cole.
I said Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen. You did say Martin Sheen.
Mm-hmm. Like someone who needs a lot of alcohol. Pissell without the beard.
David Tennant.
Yeah. That's a good one. Pacino. Isn't that Gary? Who is Gary Cole?
He's the guy who played Lumberg in Office Space. Peter, if you could just go on ahead and come in.
Oh, he does. Yeah. Kim Stanley Robinson. Hugh Grant or Kevin Bacon in City on a Hill or Putin, but everybody looks like Putin. Dr. House. Oh, yeah. No. If he took depressants instead of Vicodin.
Yeah, maybe. That's true. Right. Yeah. Obvious.
Withered Christopher Walken.
Those are all good options, though.
Yeah, they are good options. Yeah,
I think Gary Cole, Martin Sheen, those are both winners. He's going to be mad at us.
Honestly, be mad at us because we're calling you out for being like an ISIS rehabilitator. That's me saying that, not Matt.
Right. I'm all for that. We're excited to introduce a guest who, I hate this cliche, but who really needs no introduction, Noam Chomsky, who is a famous linguist and political analyst known throughout the world. He's one of the most prolific public intellectuals of our time. Had a huge influence on a lot of people, including my own career. He's the author of a great book about the media called Manufacturing Consent. He's incredibly prolific, always has something to say about everything, and he's very kind to take his time out to talk to us.
And little side note, we did have Matt Stoller on talking about the left not engaging in foreign policy discussions. So I promised to have a leftist on to talk about that. That's ridiculous. It makes it sound like that's why we brought Noam Chomsky on, as opposed to obviously trying to have him come back onto the show. But I'm just saying as a bonus, we get that.
Without further ado, let's talk to Noam Chomsky. Hello, Professor. Thank you so much for taking the time.
That's fine.
All right. Well, you have a new book out. Can you tell us a little bit about Chomsky for Activists and what prompted you to do this book now?
Well, actually, I was prompted by a friend who is editing it, and he thought it might be a good idea to put together some discussions and interviews, back articles, other things about activism. So I went along.
The book is very, very optimistic in tone. You look back and talk about the distance that people have traveled since the 60s. What do you account, you know, the sort of improvement in the level of engagement in political activism today versus, say, back in the 60s, early 60s?
Overall, it's probably greater today. There were peaks in the 60s. There was a brief peak in, with regard to the civil rights movement in around 1963, a couple of years before that, and that terminated. Then there was a brief peak in the late 60s and early 70s with regard to the anti-war movement, a couple of years. Meanwhile, other things were being developed, barely developing. You got the bare beginnings of what became later the feminist movement, the beginnings of environmental concerns, some labor concerns, a couple others. A lot of them flourished later. The seeds were laid. But today it's much broader, much more extensive. And one of the reasons for the book is there is a sense among young people that everything's hopeless. It's just can't fight City Hall. It's too big. That partly comes from not understanding what's happened in the past. If you look at the differences that activism has made just in half of my life, 50s, 60s to the present, that's enormous. If you go back earlier, it's even more.
That's a really interesting question I want to follow up on, because that sense of hopelessness, especially since Trump was elected, there's a lot of this rhetoric that sort of democracy doesn't work, the core functions of democracy, the constitutional protections, protest in a normal way doesn't work. And people are pessimistic. And I see a lot of discussion about how there's too much democracy. We need to lobby big companies like Facebook and Google and PayPal and even MasterCard and Visa to do the work for us, to sort of create the society that we want. How do you feel about that kind of sort of corporate-based activism, that lobbying corporations to do things?
Well, lobbying corporations is activism. If corporations are doing anything, it's because they're under pressure to do it. Corporation has one purpose, to profit. There's variation, but very generally, the fact is that a corporation is following the principle that it should maximize its own gain and market share. Now, one of the way corporate executives are not stupid. If they realize that they're losing a customer base, they're facing what they call reputational risk, meaning the peasants are coming with the pitchforks, we better do something, then they'll react and maybe do something, you know, sort of generally decent within limits. But that's to ask them to do it on their own makes no sense. Like asking a totalitarian state to be nice, maybe it would be under pressure. But the real changes are taking place the corporations are being sort of dragged along slightly, but the real activism is having other effects. Take the most important issue we face by far, destroying the environment. We don't solve that quickly. Nothing else is going to matter. And we don't have a lot of time, decade or two. It's not going to come from corporations. In fact, take a look at this morning's papers. Even with the pandemic and the reduction of economic activity, methane and carbon dioxide release into the atmosphere has increased because, for example, as oil prices have gone up, you're getting the automatic reaction. Fracking industry revives. Trump, one of his great deeds was to eliminate the regulations on controlling methane release, which is extremely dangerous in the short term, much more dangerous than CO2. So they do that. They can make more money that way. So you're getting more release of poisons into the atmosphere, which reduces the time span that we have to try to deal with this. Well, that's the way businesses are going to behave. They can make more money doing something, they'll do it. You put plenty of pressure on them or on the banks that finance them, may impede it. But if you do things like what Sunrise Movement did, an active young activist group, sit in, occupy congressional offices, get some support from the progressive legislators who came in kind of on the Sanders wave, Alexandria Cortez in this case, pick up some support from a Democratic, long-term Democratic senator who was interested in the environment, Edward Markey, then you can get the idea of a Green New Deal, which is essential for survival in some form. You can get it from way off in the outer space somewhere to the legislative agenda. Keep the pressure up, you can get something done. We can see it happening right before our eyes. So Biden's environmental program, climate program, it's not what's needed, but it's much better than anything that preceded. And it's not because he had a sudden revelation. There's pressures constantly. In fact, within his administration, they have brought in, sometimes at a pretty high level, people who are pressing for these things. That's the result of the constant engaged activism. So yes, it has effects, which you can see, but the effects wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the activism that lies behind them. It's the same with everything. I mean, take, say, the civil rights movement. The things you think about are Martin Luther King giving a speech on the mall, the National Mall, and I Have a Dream, and so on. So a lot of work went into that. People whose names you don't know, and I don't know. People who were riding freedom buses in the South to try to encourage Black farmers to take the risk, and it was a severe risk, of daring to cast a ballot. Suffering, some getting killed, gone from history, but they made history. Finally, you get something happening. Didn't happen by itself. Same on every single thing you can think of. Basically, get back to the question about the book. That's what it's about. Try to get people to understand this is the way things happen. I mean, if you want to take, say, the protest about the Vietnam War that began in the late 60s, became really substantial in the late 60s. 67, 68, you're getting huge demonstrations. Early in the 60s, couldn't get a whisper. I was giving talks in somebody's living room. You'd get three neighbors together. That's other people doing the same thing. When we tried to have a meeting at the university to bring in Vietnam, we had to have 10 other subjects to bring somebody in. Well, takes a lot of work like that by lots of people before anything finally breaks through. You may not see it for a long time. You may forget the people who were involved, but that's the way things happen. And the same is true today. And it is happening on a lot of fronts. Take, say, the demonstrations that took place after the Floyd murder. Pretty astonishing. There's never been anything like that before. I mean, it was real dedicated solidarity, black and white, all over the country, all over the world, in fact. Enormous public support, way beyond anything that Martin Luther King achieved. That didn't come because one black man was murdered by the police. It came from years of activist organizing and education. Shortly before that, the New York Times had published its series, 1619 series. That wouldn't have happened a couple of years earlier. It was the result of changes in understanding, commitment, dedication, take place slowly because lots of people are working on it. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen.
That was good stuff.
And guys, we say this, can't say it enough. Please subscribe to our show on Substack. That is usefulidiots.substack.com. Rate and review us, our podcast. Share the love. And, you know, we know that you love the show. And if you love this show, you're going to want even more show. And the way you get more show is you donate. You pay for play. Pay for play. That's what the show is about. At usefulidiots.substack.com. It's very affordable, and we give you extended interviews, behind-the-scenes stuff, extra segments. And this week's Substack only is an extended interview with Noam Chomsky. Use the hashtag usefulidiotspod.
Yeah, if you want to send us abusive questions, if you do it in video form, we will show it.
Yeah, we will, yeah.
You can say basically anything.
Yeah.
And we'll show it. But yeah. You have to actually be on camera.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and see you next time.